A person's life can be boiled down to a series of events. Sometimes it's difficult to know which is which. Sometimes it's possible to see a pattern. And sometimes the apparent architect of that pattern seems to want to claim at least your sanity, if not your very soul. Okay, I'm excited to have Douglas McMillan. Am I saying that right, Doug?
Yes.
Douglas McMillan on the show tonight. He is a paranormal investigator, and I want to get into some of his stories and what he's faced, throughout the few years here. What got you into investigating paranormal activities?
It wasn't really much of a choice. Just things, strange things have happened to me all throughout the course of my life. Everything from seeing ghosts when I was about 6 years old, all the way through dealing with a very negative entity that would make contact with me every few years for a stretch of 17 years. And just having dealt with all of that, I figured I'd want to see if I can help other people find the kind of peace that I found just by dealing with it and learning as much as they can about whatever it is that is affecting them.
Well, cool. Because when I started my podcast, I was kind of curious if I was going to get anybody that, was interested in the same thing I'm trying to put out there, On some of your investigations, what have you come across?
Through my investigations, I've investigated everything from private residences to a pretty big hotel in New York City called the Algonquin Hotel. And I mean, by and large, what I've encountered seems to be either residual or intelligent haunts. And at least that I've determined, nothing much darker than that. In fact, I haven't really come across anything dark at all. Luckily, knock on wood, hopefully that continues because I don't particularly want to, but if it does, it does.
In 1998, I made a documentary based on true ghost stories in the valley and in our valley. That's why I called it Ghost in the Valley, and I did quite well on the documentary. But before I did that, I went to our priest in our church, and I was telling him about it, and I thought he'd be very skeptical on it. But to my surprise, he was like, "Be very careful that where you step, because there's a thin line between ghost spirits and a demon." Or demonic events, you have to make sure you stay away from Ouija boards and or anything that would attract the dark side in your home or on you. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And I came across another person who that's what he does. He helps the person, the spirit, move on to the other side. I mean, to the light. And I thought that was, he brought it back to me that, basically we're all dealing with dead people. I mean, talking about paranormal, ghosts, orbs, it's all the spirits of the dead. So the priest was basically telling me, just be very careful out there. And so luckily I've come close a couple of times and I got away from that real quick. But I've had a few of those experiences myself just through the years. And from making that documentary, I decided to do the podcast and reach out to other people that could relate.
So it's good to know what is likely that you might be dealing with and what you may be dealing with. Like understanding the field and what you can encounter in pursuit of whatever your personal goal is. My personal goal is to just find as much information as I can, A, and B, to help other people get through their tough times as relating to paranormal incidents. And those being my goals, you got to know, you know, the stakes, so to speak. And by and large, it's nothing. I mean, I'll be honest with you, most of the cases that I've worked, it's either been easily explainable, like electrical wiring malfunctions. I know it sounds very typical, but it's unfortunately realistic. Is 90% of the time, it's something that can be easily explained away, even 95%. But
Right. I've had probably half of mine were like that, you know, where it actually was, right. there was nothing there. You know, but there were a lot where there were, you know, and I was surprised just on, you think it's just in one person, one place of the country or one place of your state, but it's everywhere.
There's so many. What I'd love to do in New York City particularly is, you know, try to do like haunted hotels in particular, because there are so many in New York City. It's kind of ridiculous, actually. Between haunted hotels and haunted restaurants are the two most prolific types of hauntings in New York City. As a lot of the restaurants used to be homes and carriage houses to very popular people from history, like Aaron Burr and people of the colonial era. Well, not colonial, but the, like the 1800s or so.
Right. There's a, I'm actually between Cleveland and Youngstown, Ohio. And you're New York City, right?
I personally live in the Bronx, but I investigate all five boroughs.
I did find that hotels and old hotels and old hospitals that, you know, people maybe haven't moved on, the spirit, are still there.
Well, you're not too far from Gettysburg, are you?
Not real far, no. I've been to Gettysburg, matter of fact. It was very interesting.
Yeah, I've heard some interest. That's one of those places that I definitely want to go and check out. I've heard some really interesting stories about it.
There's a lot of orb activity there.
Well, my personal opinion on orbs is it's 99.9% an orb is just dust or a bug or something like that. There's only particular behaviors that an orb can exhibit for me to think that it's anything but that.
Yeah, I don't really deal in orbs, but I know that that's basically a lot of your ghost walks and stuff they put on there are based around the orbs, you know.
Yeah, I went on a ghost walk up in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, where they were talking about this one place in particular that had a lot of orb activity, and there was also a place where it was a lot of loose dirt, you know. So anytime somebody would walk, they'd take a picture with the flash, and the light would refract off the dust particles, and boom, the place is infested with spirits. You know,
right.
It's great for the tourists who want to go and get scared on a ghost walk, but I wouldn't invest a lot of energy in that particular quote-unquote proof.
Right. Matter of fact, my episode that was released today on iTunes on Ghosts in the Valley was on a Hogback Bridge, and it's in Hermitage, Pennsylvania, and I was there. Matter of fact, I did the documentary. One of the six shows of my documentary was based on the Hogback Bridge. And so I taped that back in 1998. And, I mean, it was a whole lot different then than it is now. I went back a couple weeks ago, and it just didn't seem the same. Well, reconstructed the road and the bridge. But the legend is a young girl was murdered there, and her ghost comes up on the bridge, and your car goes out. And the young actress I had playing the part back in '98, she knew the area because she was from the area. I didn't know much about it, but the strange thing was, when I was putting out the newspapers and internet, and I was asking for true ghost stories, and I got three from that area from three different people of the same girl, you know. And then even after the fact, 21 years later, I'm still getting, you know, stories from the bridge.
Have you ever heard of the Bridgeport Triangle in Massachusetts?
I haven't heard of that one, no.
It's basically a nexus, apparently, for pretty much every kind of paranormal activity you can think of, everything from ghosts to demons, UFOs, cryptids, just everything. It's a hodgepodge to the point where actually I believe either Amazon or Netflix is doing a show based on the area. So that's definitely a place you can check out if you're looking for, you know, if you're looking for stories on crazy stuff that happens in like one centralized area, that's a spot to check out. In fact, I'm going to go and do a walk around of the place probably in November with my team and some other people.
And you use the EVPs and all that.
Yeah. So if you just want to real quick touch on my investigation method, I myself am very much an empirical evidence only kind of guy. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a medium. I'm nothing like that. I take my instruments, be it an audio recorder or a camera, and I make my recordings, and whatever I find on those recordings are what I can present as evidence. The only non-recorded stuff that I can present as evidence are experiences that are shared amongst multiple people. So if only one person has a personal experience, you know, good story, adds to the you know, spooky feel of the place, but unless it can be corroborated by someone else on the team, I can't offer it up as evidence.
How many people work on your team?
It's a rotating group between about 4 to 8 people, depending on the time of year, availability, since about half of my group are teachers. So their availability varies based on, you know, whether or not school is in session.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, we've got a computer scientist and a network technician and ESL teacher, people from, you know, various disciplines that have the ability to bring different mindsets to the investigations, which I really, really value. People who just go in thinking, oh my God, it's a ghost. You know, you're just going to, you know, confirmation bias. You're going to go in there expecting to see a ghost, and everything that happens, you're going to interpret as possible ghost activity. So having people who have the mindset of, you know, it's probably not that. And I don't think it will be that unless something really happens to change my mind. You know what I mean? Impartiality is very important. Mm-hmm.
So do you travel outside of New York City or?
For the most part, stay within New York City. But I've had a couple of cases in Hoboken, New Jersey. Me and a couple of my teammates have gone up to the Hinsdale House in upstate New York. Have you heard of that place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we went up there. Unfortunately, we didn't get anything. But I don't think we're being aggressive enough. I'm very loath to provoke on an investigation because I don't want that to have any adverse effect on me or my team. But apparently at the Hinsdale House, that's kind of what you have to do in order to get a response. Apart from that, Eastern State Penitentiary is on our list of places to check out. I want to go down to the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. I have a bunch of places. We're going to the Mothman Festival, actually, in September. That's not too far from your neck of the woods, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Yep. I think it's happening the weekend of September 21st. So I'm not sure when this podcast or episode got released, but
it'll be on, I believe, September 24th.
Ah, so the festival will have just ended by the time this is released.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that should be fun. It's kind of like the Roswell Festival in New Mexico, except, you know, the East Coast version.
Yeah, I was, when I started doing my investigations myself, I remember the priest telling me that, because I was trying to squeeze out some of his stories, like an exorcism or something, and he wasn't going to budge on that. But he did say, you know, there's a line there, and I honored that line. But yeah, I mean, going to different places. Houses I've been to. I came real close one time with the one girl who called me and just wanted me to come check out her house. And I was making the documentary at the time, and she didn't want it on the documentary. She just wanted to, I guess, to prove to me her house was on it, you know. So when I went in there, it was, I thought, more than haunted. It was on the demon side, you know. It's like, it was, I mean, totally. I mean, me and my partner were in there, and he, right off the bat, the door shut, and the bottom, like, you're in the living room, but like a wooden floor, but underneath, like, somebody's hitting that floor from the basement with a sledgehammer.
Oh, so it was infested, is what it's called.
Well, I sent my partner down to investigate, make sure somebody wasn't down there pounding on something, you know, or and there was nobody down there, but he said he felt very, like, cold. So he came back up, and he said, I'm not comfortable in here. And at the same time, you know, she's, like, over in a corner, like, looking at us like Satan. And I was like, okay, I'm out of here. You know, it's like I didn't want to get part of. She says, you don't understand what I'm dealing with here. And all of a sudden the pounding started up again from the basement, and we just left. But I always think about that when I go on certain, most of mine are usually a loved one that hasn't moved on from the house yet. And they're not violent.
Yeah. Well, one method that I've considered recently, and I'm actually going to write an article on this. I haven't started on it yet because I'm in restaurant management school at the moment, so my time is a bit limited. But are you familiar at all with electronics or the principles of it? Do you know what degaussing is?
A little bit.
Basically, to degauss something means to dispel the latent electromagnetic, like electrostatic charges build up on it. So like, remember the old, you know, CRT tube TVs? Some of them, you press a button on it that said degauss, and that would, like, dispel the static charge that had built up on the screen.
Yeah, it's basically a static electricity.
Right. So my contention is, if one of the most popular theories about what a ghost actually is the electromagnetic field of a person, you know. So if you can measure the soul, apparently it is the electromagnetic field that the body puts off, or bioelectric field. So imagine your body is the toy, and your soul is the battery that makes it go, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're operating on that assumption, and that a ghost is that bioelectric field that's become disconnected from the body after death, and that's what's somehow able to make noise and communicate and whatever, which that's a whole other thing. But if that is what it is, then is it possible to get rid of it by degaussing an area?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And can I say that brings up some really baffling moral quandaries, like, is it ethically or morally responsible to annihilate a soul in that way? Do you know what I mean?
Meaning get rid of the soul or having a soul move on?
Well, I mean, I think it would be more like destroying it. It wouldn't be enabling it to move on. It would be dispelling it. So making it lose cohesion and therefore, you know, essentially destroying it. Like if it's a negative entity, like a negative soul or something like that, is it possible that that's A, an option, and B, is it morally right, justifiable to do that?
Like killing a spirit.
Basically, yeah. That's like a final death, you know?
That was a question I had from another paranormal person a few days ago, was that I believe there was a difference between a ghost and a spirit.
Oh, I think I know what you mean. So the ghost would be like an intelligent, communicative, responding kind of entity, whereas a spirit is something that's just stuck in the environment that doesn't really have any remnants of consciousness. Is that correct?
Exactly. Right. Correct.
So if it's the latter, then it's not really morally ambiguous. It's just like, okay, well, it's stuck here in a loop. It's just the environment playing a recording over and over again. So there's no, I don't think that there's any quandary there. It's pretty black and white. It's like, okay, well, there's a recording here. I'll just degauss the area. Boom, it's gone. It's done. But a ghost, on the other hand, that's where I would have a hard time with it.
Mm-hmm. I really never thought about that. You know, I just thought they were basically in the same line.
Right. No, that the parlance of the or the jargon, whatever you want to call it, of the industry is residual haunt, which is the spirit, as you just said, and intelligent haunt is a ghost.
So you you're not only an investigator, but you have your own blog. You do?
I do, but I haven't touched it in quite some time, mainly due to, like I said, just life getting in the way. The school and my girlfriend has just recently moved in with me. We're going to be getting married in a year or so. So life has thrown me a couple of curves. I'm still doing investigations, but I haven't been keeping up on the blog as well as I should have.
Your investigation is more of a side job, or is it just something you're interested in? Or
it's something I do, you know, maybe like twice a month at this point. Usually, though, between September and November, it ramps up for obvious reasons. Everybody gets all Halloween crazy, so they think that they're seeing you know, a killer clown under their bed, so I have to go and tell them that it's not that.
Seems like a lot of mine come from whenever there's a full moon. You know, and it's kind of strange because a lot of people that are in nursing homes, if you've ever been in a nursing home during a full moon, it's like crazy in there. But I remember my priest and a couple other preachers have told me that I could do basically the same thing they do when they go into a home to bless a home. Just basically, if there's a spirit still left in the house, if you just say, you can leave now, and it's okay to leave, or it's okay to move on, it's usually the end of it. I've done that a couple times, and it actually has worked.
Well, that's another difference with me and a lot of investigators. Well, actually, I don't know what the percentage is, but I myself am agnostic. Most of the people on my team are agnostic or atheistic, just flat out. I don't have any, that doesn't make my life more difficult. Some people are like, well, how can you deal with issues of the soul and the continuance of life after death if you're agnostic or atheistic? To me, I justify it by saying, well, you know, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. If I experience these things, then I've only got a couple of rational explanations that I can chalk them up to. And I personally don't believe that the continuance of life after death necessitates having a religious viewpoint.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of people that believe the same way. So that's another show in itself, I think.
It's a bit of a hot button issue, but it's definitely a conversation.
I was looking at your blog, you know, and I was just thinking there's a kind of a connection there between like blogging and podcasting, but the podcasting is kind of audio format and your blogging is words and texting.
Yeah, there's a link there. I mean, I've been even considering starting a blog my own, but I'm looking for the right particular subject matter to justify its existence. Just talking about my own experience, that'll give me maybe, you know, 20 episodes, if that.
I'd like to thank you for being on the show today and sharing your experiences and keep me updated on your September trip to West Virginia.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
That was Douglas McMillan, paranormal investigator out of New York City. Doug had a lot of interesting theories that I never thought of before, but a couple of things I do see differently is I do believe that a spirit does move on to the light, or the dark side is from the devil. Now, Doug and a few other paranormal investigators that I do know believe in the proof is in the pudding. I do like hearing other people's perspective on paranormal activity and ghost stories, or separating the spirit from the ghost. So a lot of people do believe in the ghost being of a earthly presence, whereas a spirit is a movable force from anywhere in that area, or you can even carry it on your back to another destination. Doug's theories were very interesting, and I do look forward to talking to Doug again in the future. So a very big shout out to Douglas McMillan, paranormal investigator out of New York City. So we'll see you in 2 weeks on another great story on Ghost in the Valley.